My first guests of the week are this week's After Dinner speakers. It's Louise Richards, Vice President of the New Zealand Geographical Society. And as it sometimes happens, the After Dinner speaker has brought in a guest of her own, and it's fellow geographer Dr. Brendan Blue. And Brendan's currently on a George Mason Centre for the Natural Environment funded project examining the drive to make New Zealand predator-free by 2050. Kia ora kōrua. Hello to both of you.
Kia ora, Brian.
Kia ora, Brian.
Rivers, water in general. Now, it's become a bit of a fraught issue in this country. I mean, and you've got people talking about rivers and waterways and catchment systems, saying our rivers are really, really sick and dirty, and others saying laws to clean them up make are way too stringent and make our business unviable. So you've stuck yourselves between a rock and a hard place tonight, haven't you?
We have picked a very controversial issue in some ways. And I mean, from my position as a geography teacher, within schools, we really encourage the students to look at these key geographical issues and treat them like an inquiry and think about the different perspectives, the challenges involved in them. And really, this is coming under environmental geography, which is where we look at how society interact in the relationship between society, place and the environment. And Brendan and I were talking actually just before about how important rivers are to New Zealanders. I mean, coming from overseas, I have vivid memories of people telling me about all their experiences of jumping in rivers when they were younger, and all those family holidays set by rivers. So rivers are a really important part of New Zealand's life. And so this whole idea of healthiness, which is something that Brendan has been exploring, is a very topical issue, and one that has lots of questions still to be answered.
In fact, you could say, as a geographer, there is nothing that shapes the land as much as water. I mean, sunlight is absolutely essential. You know, yeah. There's no sunlight, no life. But water, that's what shapes the land, and water in its various guises, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if we think physically, lots of people will remember from their school geography the whole idea of meanders. I was down in the South Island in my last school holidays, and we rode along the River Clutha. Beautiful meandering river. And you're absolutely right. They really do shape the landscape. But I think what we're interested in here, obviously, is actually what's going on in the river with the water quality and healthiness.
So what do you mean by healthiness? When somebody asks you that question, Brendan, what's your answer?
Oh, I don't think there is a single answer, and I suppose that's the interest for me. I'm as an environmental geographer and science society scholar, I'm really interested in how we kind of create knowledge and use knowledge to change the world around us. And so the concept of river health is something I explored during my PhD, actually, as a kind of a way in which some scientists have tried to kind of articulate what they think a good river looks like and how a good river should be. And so my work on river health has been looking at how essentially the values and politics of those scientists gets kind of embedded into our kind of measurements of river health and our frameworks for understanding river health.
See, dirty rivers are not necessarily, and it's an issue which has become more political recently, but it's not as if we didn't have dirty rivers until the 21st century. I remember as a toddler in Ngātia, one of my first memories is getting out of the house without being asked, well, without telling anyone, sneaking down the road to the bridge over the Piako River. And that river, nobody swam in that river in Ngātia on the Hauraki Plains in the late 60s. Nobody swam in the Waikato River in Hamilton in the 70s. In fact, I think people just made this assumption. If the river is going through farmland or it goes through towns, forget it. It's gone. You know, you want a clean river, go into the bush. Go to a national park, but forget about it when you're in the lowlands.
Yeah, I mean, people in New Zealand especially have been changing our rivers for a pretty long time, essentially since Europeans arrived. We turned up and chopped down all the forest and fundamentally altered the way in which sediment and water flow through through rivers, through our catchments. So that's been happening for a really long time. It's only relatively recently that attention has turned to particularly the role of nutrients and water quality in rivers. But that's only one relatively narrow aspect of what makes a river kind of, healthy or what good condition is for
but
a river.
It's interesting you pointed out how what our specialists say and what they value or take note of in terms of river health has changed. Because I'm thinking also back in the 70s, 60s and 70s when I was a kid, what we seemed to focus on was, is this river going to flood or not? And if it's going to flood, how do we stop it from flooding? That was the issue.
And that's a really important part of the story of New Zealand's waterways. Attempts to prevent rivers from flooding have actually been, from an ecological point of view, really harmful. They've disconnected the river from its floodplains and had disconnected it from the wetlands that it used to occasionally flood and turn sediment over and rework. And those are really important from a habitat point of view. Those are really important habitats, those wetlands, those floodplains. We've kind of acted to channelize rivers, to stick them in their place and tell them where they should be, because we're a bit scared of them fundamentally. And I think that's a real issue with our waterways.
Yeah, I think Brendan makes a really good point there about when we think about rivers, they always return to their natural course. They always return to what they naturally were meant to do or meant to be or where they were supposed to go. And so when we think about places which have had so much urbanisation around those river areas, and that in itself has caused the problems of flooding because we've changed what's happening around the river, but a river will always do what it's meant to do. And so that's that whole idea that we sort of started with about this interaction between people and the environment, and sometimes where that clash can happen and where those interactions can have very negative consequences.
Making a new channel or straightening a channel for a river system, can that actually make it dirtier in terms of its the cleanliness of the water, the healthiness of the water in terms of the biology inside it?
I don't know about dirtier necessarily, but it certainly changes the processes and the dynamics of those waterways. We've tended to straighten rivers. We've tended to remove, to make them less heterogeneous, to remove complexity from the waterway, to take wood out, to take rocks out, to make them essentially just one channel taking water as quickly as possible to the sea. And that has real impacts on the kind of range and availability of habitat for freshwater fish and all those other species that live in the water. I'm no ecologist, but removing that kind of the lack of diversity of habitat that we have actively intervened to produce has been a real problem.
How much has the clearing of bush from the catchments, the upper catchments of many of our rivers, changed the actual shape and the way the river behaves?
That has certainly made our rivers dirtier in a literal sense, in that removing vegetation from steep slopes causes those slopes to fail. That soil then ends up in the river and is fundamentally one of the major reasons that many rivers are dirtier. They have more dirt in them.
I remember being astounded by the amount of sediment that some of our rivers carry. And I think it was the Rangitike. I could be wrong here, but I think I was at some picnic spot and reading about how much the channel, the bed of the river, had risen up during the second half of the 19th century because the bush around it was cleared, and suddenly it's clear, carrying all the sediment. And the bank just went up by tens of metres, and that's just sediment load. I was astounded by that, and that must have a big impact on actually what the river looks like, let alone the quality of the water in it.
Without knowing the details, I wonder whether the bank went up, or quite often what happens is the river actually incises down and becomes deeper, more channelized, leaving its floodplain behind. So both can potentially happen as a result of the changing kind of hydraulics of the catchment.
Do you know if that's what happened with the Waikato?
Almost
you
certainly,
don't.
I'd say.
Because that's one of the things that strikes me at Hamilton. The Waikato is in quite a deep channel there now. And I sometimes wonder if it was always the case or whether it's changed, because I'm pretty sure that Hamilton Lake is an old oxbow. It's where the river once went. And, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but the river now is quite a bit lower than the surrounding plain.
certainly wouldn't surprise me without wanting to speculate about a specific case that I'm not certain about. But yeah, those changing kind of catchment dynamics can make a really big difference. And quite often we focus on something like, well, when we're talking about river health, we focus simply on water quality or swimmability in a really narrow sense. We talk about the nutrients in the river without kind of taking into account that broader catchment context and the much larger scale changes that we've produced.
And what's happening around that river? We were talking about that earlier, what's actually taking place around that space and place, absolutely. And so it's interesting because you talked about at the beginning, Brian, the whole idea that, you know, was that river dirty? And Brendan's just talked to the fact about this idea of swimmable rivers and wadeable, which of course we know was something that was brought up back in 2017 as this idea of how New Zealand was going to measure its rivers, looking at the swimmable river or whether it's wadeable. And the work that Brendan's been doing is really interesting in how we actually come up with those quantifiers to actually determine the river quality.
Did we actually get an answer on that, a definitive one, about what the difference is between a swimmable and a wadeable river?
Well, some of this work was actually done by my colleague Mark Tadaki in a chapter we wrote together, but no is the short answer. I guess the answer is it depends how you define it. There was quite a lot of contestation around the fact that the government of the time was able to kind of, quote, turn 10% of our rivers swimmable overnight by just changing the way in which they define swimmability, changing the kinds of thresholds they used. So I guess my interest, I have a background as a geomorphologist, as someone who studies how rivers work, but my interest these days is really more about how we actually create and use knowledge to change the world. And so my interest in these kinds of things is how do we come up with these measures for swimmability? Is there a kind of politics to these measures? How do our ideas about what a landscape should look like get kind of embedded within things like swimmability and the measures we produce?
It seems to me there's a real mix of the subjective and the potentially empirical here.
Mm-hmm.
Are both important here, or do we need to remove the subjective and get down to hard nitty-gritty figures here?
Some would suggest that.
What would you suggest?
I'm not sure personally that one can ever fully remove the subjective from science, and science is done by people, and people bring their own politics, their own experiences, their own backgrounds to the questions that they ask and the way they ask those questions. And so I think personally, rather than trying to just remove subjectivity from scientific knowledge, it's probably better to kind of be reflective to consider how our own backgrounds and politics shape the knowledge that we're producing and the ways in which we implement that knowledge. Yeah, but there are a range of perspectives on what the best way of dealing with subjectivity in science is.
And one thing we haven't talked about here, and which is that the value of tangata whenua place on river systems. I mean, that's one of the three things many whakapapa back to, their awa. And these rivers were a key part of Māori life before Pākehā even knew that New Zealand existed, Aotearoa even existed.
Yeah, so increasingly people are seeing value in these historically marginalised ways of seeing the world, and this is the result of years and years of labour and protest by Indigenous scholars and Indigenous activists. And so I think words like Mata Ranga Māori are now very much part of the everyday life of people studying landscapes in New Zealand. But I think we're still kind of beginning to get to grips with what that really means for river science and for river policy and actual governance, how we actually make decisions around rivers. I think there are still a lot of questions to be asked around who benefits from this kind of use of Indigenous knowledge and Indigenous terms, and is simply acknowledging Indigenous environmental knowledge is enough, or do we need to be thinking about who actually has the power to make decisions in relation to the environment? Who's actually getting to be out there defining what river health is, for example, or deciding whether health is even the right word to use?
How important was making the Whanganui River an entity in its own right? And is that a game changer? And should other rivers also become entities in their own right?
I think that was definitely a game changer and a really important move for New Zealand, you know, world leading. And when you sort of look back at the sort of the reporting at the time, there were some lovely expressions where we talk about the river as a living being and the river has a voice. And I think that's where Brendan's work that he's looked at about how we quantify healthiness, you know, that whole idea of the river having a voice, you know, where has that been acknowledged perhaps in the past, and where has that been taken into an account when we quantify how healthy is a river? So that was definitely, you know, it's a really significant move for New Zealand and, you know, and globally as well.
Yeah, I think you asked whether other rivers should have the same status. I think the answer is it depends. I know some iwi don't necessarily feel that that's an appropriate way to kind of recognise their ancestors. I can't speak for Māori here, but there's a real diversity of perspectives on that. And so I don't think there is a one-size-fits-all solution. I don't think the answer is to simply make all rivers legal people, but to kind of negotiate these relationships and the politics. These are very political questions, and they need to be negotiated really at the level of individual communities and individual iwi in the case of New Zealand.
Well, that leads me to one question. I think we can squeeze in one more, and that is that what's key here? Is it having more people involved in the science and getting data on rivers, fecal counts, river flows, whatever, the actual biology of river systems? Or is it consultation between different groups who all have a stake in a river system and the water that it carries?
I think you're onto something with the second one there. I think increasing engagement with the people who are affected by, who live beside and engage with our waterways is the fundamental thing. These are fundamentally human human decisions, human relationships with waterways, and finding ways to have these conversations more constructively is probably the key.
Some of the changes under the last government, that is the Labor Green New Zealand First government, created a bit of a stir among farmers. Was the government doing things, because it's created some pushback, is there room for the government to do more in terms of consultation with farming interests?
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. As Brendan just explained, it's this idea that many people are using the rivers and many people are living by the rivers. So you need to be able to consult with groups and have the conversations and work with them, which is definitely something which I know, you know, farmers will be keen to do. And so I think this idea of a consultation is a way forward.
I think right at the start you mentioned swimming in rivers that came out of natural native bush as being the only safe ones to swim in. I think increasingly we don't accept that as a society, and so we need to find ways to negotiate kind of better relationships with fresh water across the entire country, not simply in, you know, conservation areas, the conservation estate.
Brendan and Louise, thank you very much for joining me.
Kia ora, Brian.
Kia ora.
Thank you.
That's Louise Richards. She's the Vice President of the New Zealand Geographical Society, and her fellow geographer, she brought in a guest, Dr. Brendan Blue.